Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Life Transformation Radio. This show is all about life transformations and our journey from where we were to why we are doing what we are doing today. We will discuss the hiccups, the roller coasters, and the blood, sweat, and tears that has been poured out while discovering our purpose. It is all about our transformation. Here is your host, Sean Douglas.
This is Life Transformation Radio. I am your host, Master Resilience Implementer, Inspirational Speaker, Performance Enhancement Expert, and author, Sean Douglas. Welcome to all of our listeners who are listening from wherever you are. This show is heard in over 30 countries, such as the U.S., Brazil, Canada, France, Australia, and New Zealand. So thank you to those who are listening from around the world. Life Transformation Radio is all about our transformations. Here, we tell the stories of why we are doing what we're doing. We highlight that transformational moment that changed our lives and how we use these two to help transform others and elevate their lives. You can listen to us every Wednesday on the first and third Fridays at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're catching us live, because this is a live show, you can call in at 657-383-1109. Again, the number is 657-383-1109. 383-1109. If you're catching us on the recording, either on YouTube or iTunes, Stitcher or TuneIn, you can go ahead and hit the subscribe button so that you don't miss any of the episodes and they'll be delivered right to your inbox. On the show are impactful and amazing guests that are impacting everyone around them. And my guest today does exactly that. So help me welcome to the show, Sandra Younger. What's happening?
Hey, Sean. I am good out here in California. How are you?
I am doing amazing, and I'm kind of stressed. Today has been one of those days. Trying to get the TED Talk stuff ready. Today was one of the deadlines I had to meet, and, you know, just making sure that everything's working the way everything's supposed to work. So, yeah, I mean, I am super pumped to have you on the show. We met in San Diego back in September at Steve Ulscher's New Media Summit, and I was just drawn to you. You are such an amazing person, and we both love resilience. So yeah, I'm so grateful and lucky to have you on the show.
Oh, thanks. Well, it's certainly my pleasure and honor to be here. I appreciate it.
No problem. So if you're ready, I am ready.
Okay.
Let's do this. So this episode is entitled The Comeback Formula with Sandra Younger. Sandra Younger lost her home, 12 neighbors, and nearly her own life in California's biggest wildfire. Her book about the disaster, The Fire Outside My Window, has been acclaimed as required reading for residents of wildfire country, adopted as a training text by top-level emergency professionals, and praised by reviewers as a, quote, couldn't put it down page-turner. After the fire, Sandra discovered that personal resilience is both a natural strength and a skill set we can build like a muscle. Combining her own experience with leading academic research, she developed the Comeback Formula, a five-step system of powerful, common-sense practices proven to transform disaster into opportunity and loss into legacy. Sandra is now the founder of Comeback Solutions International, sharing her resilience-boosting message as an international speaker, workshop leader, and media guest. She has appeared on ABC, CBS, PBS, CBC, Fox, and the CW, and was also featured in 2017 NBC Dateline's special Inferno. You can connect with her at Sandra Younger, Younger, sandrayounger.com. Her Facebook is facebook.com/sandra.m.younger. And then you can look her up on Twitter, twitter.com/syounger. So I definitely want you to connect with her. So, wow, just I'm just blown away reading this, just like I was in San Diego. I was just blown away at what you survived and what that Cedar Fire in California years ago, just how enormous and disastrous it really was.
Right. It is still considered, even after 14 years, the biggest wildfire in California history in terms of size, in terms of acreage burned.
Right.
And yet we also have to acknowledge the horrific fires that we've seen since then, and of course many fires before that. The Cedar Fire has been eclipsed in terms of numbers of structures burned and lives lost by other fires, but it still remains historic because it blew away our usual expectations of wildfire. The way that it moved so quickly, burning 100,000 acres overnight and just blasted out of these distant parklands 40 miles east of San Diego into these upscale affluent suburbs, just people could not really even believe it. So that has made it a historic fire that is still studied to this day. And of course, my interest in it is more personal because my husband and I woke up right in the middle of it, in the middle of the night.
No way. You woke up in the middle of the fire going, was it consuming your house or what was it doing?
Well, it was almost consuming our house. We had just moved to the back country 7 months before. We had decided we were done with the suburbs. Our kids were launched. We could live anywhere we wanted to live. And we had these two giant Newfoundland dogs, think Black St. Bernards. And we thought, all right, it only makes sense to go get us a little bit of land out in the country. So we found this beautiful house perched on the side of a mountain with this spectacular view, this canyon view all the way to Mexico, Sean. And we thought, this is just amazing. And we thought it was so special it needed a name. So we called it Terra Nova, which means our new land. Our new land. And I can't tell you how much we loved it. It wasn't just the view. It was all the critters running around outside, the rabbits and the roadrunners and the coyotes and sometimes a rattlesnake on the front porch. That happens. But one day on my way to work, I even saw a bobcat. And I thought, wow, there is a real wildcat in this place, which was called Wildcat Canyon. How amazing. And then just a few months later, one hot, windy October night, we woke up around 3 a.m. to the sight of fire outside our windows.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did they find out how it started? Did they find out how that fire got started?
We do know how it started. It was started by a lost hunter way out in the Cleveland National Forest, miles and miles away. And he got lost and dehydrated and did not know what else to do but light a signal fire, which he had been taught to do in hunter safety school. And it worked. They saw the smoke from the fire and were able to pluck him out of the backcountry in a sheriff's helicopter. But the problem was that he was in an inaccessible place that fire crews could not get to easily or safely. And it was at the end of the day when at that time the air attack couldn't fly, and it was at a time and place that just set up the perfect firestorm.
Right.
At the end of a long drought, really hot, really dry, and the real factor in almost all of these catastrophic fires here out west is the wind. So we have these horrific Santa Ana winds that come up seasonally, and that happened that night, and this little fire that had gotten away from the intended signal fire just exploded and came galloping through San Diego, much of San Diego County, on its way to the coast, essentially.
Wow.
So that is what happened. That is how it got started.
That is so crazy. Like the best intentions, right? I mean, the guy's doing what he kind of was taught, but...
Yep, that's what the judge said. He did have to face charges for setting a fire without authorization on federal lands, and many people thought he should have been charged with murder. But that was the plea bargain, and the judge said in his sentencing that, you know, he didn't mean to do all this damage, and he was doing exactly what he'd been taught to do under exactly those circumstances. And so if I throw the book at him, what am I going to do with someone who was malicious and, you know, who intended to do harm? It was a very controversial
Oh, I don't doubt it. I bet there's a lot of people that were like super mad because they lost like a bunch of houses and family and oh, of course. But I think, you know, I'm not a legal, you know, expert or whatever, but what I think I do know is that to even be convicted for murder, you'd have to be some sort of, you know, malicious or premeditated, or it'd have to be like, I'm going to, you know, make the choice to do this or whatever. Like it was, I mean, as an accident, like, I don't know. But anyway, that was, I would not doubt that it is controversial, even to this day. Yeah.
And still to this day. But so here's how that little tiny signal fire lit 15, 20 miles from my home affected us. It traveled within a few hours. And as I mentioned, so fast that the fire engines couldn't get out ahead of us. So there was not a lot of notice. There was not a lot of evacuation during those early hours of the fire. And many of us in our new neighborhood of Wildcat Canyon woke up surrounded by flames. So we see these flames outside of our window on the mountain across the canyon from us. And we see a glow deep in the canyon below us, which told us, Sean, that the fire was also on our side. It wasn't just this little isolated patch on the other side of the canyon. And we knew we just had to move. We had to get out of there. We should have already been out of there. So we grabbed, of course, our dogs, and we had a little cockatiel. We stuffed her in a traveling cage. I grabbed a plastic laundry basket and started shoveling photographs up the walls and the dressers into it. My husband's a photographer. We grabbed his negatives, some of his best negatives, and we jumped in the closest car, which happened to be my little Acura coupe. We couldn't have taken Bob's big Suburban because we couldn't find the keys for that. So disaster preparation is important. So here we go. I'm driving. We back out of the garage into this swirl, this tornado now of red embers, because the fire was just there. And as we stop at the top of the driveway, just long enough to shift gears, we see this big wall of white hot light and flame, and our beautiful new home is surrounded. So we can't stay. We have to go, and there's only one way out, and it is down this narrow sliver of asphalt cut into the side of the mountain. You would not want to drive off the edge. And just as we got to the most treacherous part of this road, we hit the smoke. And I couldn't see anything. It was like looking out of an airplane window into a cloud. And I started to scream, I can't see the road. And my husband yells back, well, just don't wreck the car. Now, what he meant, of course, was do not drive off the side of this mountain. So here we are, Sean, and we're teetering on the side of the mountain. We're lost in the smoke. We got to get down this road. The fire is right behind us, and a bobcat jumps out of the brush right to my headlight and then dashes off into the smoke. And something in me knew that that cat was on the road I couldn't see, and something in me knew to follow it. So I followed the bobcat, and when I got to the point where he had disappeared into the smoke, I could now see these two smeary fields of red on either side of us. And what it told me was that everything ahead of us was on fire, and this dark place between the two fields was the road. So I steered for this dark place, and that is how we escaped the Cedar Fire, negotiating between these two lines of fire for about a mile or so until we finally broke through this final curtain of flames into clear night. That is what happens when people wake up in the middle of a major disaster.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Like I'm blown away right now. Like I'm just picturing what this looks like in my head, you know, with the smoke and the But something that you said, you know, there's so much to take away from this right now. Like my mind is racing right now. I'm just like mentally and physically, like how many times do we do that in life? You know what I mean?
Right.
There's fire on each side. You know, we just got to steer. Like, we just got to try to stay focused and figure something out. You know what I mean? And you said that you were driving into the black, like into the, you couldn't see. But that's kind of how life is like.
There's a sermon in there somewhere, right? We head to the dark place, and the dark place turns out to be our salvation.
There's a sermon in this.
There's a sermon in there. And the thing is that so often we want to know everything that's going on. Why did this happen to me? What's happening? Where should I go? What should I do next? And we're just in the smoke, and we can't figure it out until we break out of that smoke. And in the meantime, we've got to stay on that dark path and just get through it.
Yep. No, you're dead on. Absolutely. Wow.
Well, you are in the military. You've been deployed. I cannot imagine the uncertainty that you've had to deal with moment to moment on an extended basis.
Oh, yeah. It takes a little bit of getting used to.
Yeah, I'm sure. So I considered myself so fortunate that A, I survived, and B, this was a temporary isolated situation for me, this life or death situation. But it did give me a real appreciation, because we were about as close to the edge as anybody would want to be. Our car was scorched.
Really?
The firefighters told me later, if we have a scorched engine, we consider that a close call.
Wow.
Right.
So you were like super close. I mean, you were like super close.
We were doing the same thing at the same things at the same time as our 12 neighbors who did not make it out. So,
yeah.
You know, at one point, I started trying to figure out, I started making a list, Sean, of all the things that had they gone one way, had they gone the other way rather than the way they did, we wouldn't have made it. And it was things like, you know, our garage door was on the side away from the fire. I just had put new tires on my car. I had plenty of traction. I had LASIK surgery so I could see because I couldn't find my glasses. And all of these things, you know, the bobcat, why did we even wake up when we woke up? We didn't know that for a long time. And all of these variables. And I got up to 30-some variables, any one of which, had it gone the other way, would have cost us our lives that night. And I just kind of got creeped out and quit. And all you can say in response to that is, thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah, you just gotta. Man, I'm just speechless. I'm blown away at that story. I heard a little bit about it, you know, in San Diego. But I'm just picturing in my mind. I've been through some stuff, but that's just. It really target. You know, we're both resilience professionals, and it really targets your fight or flight response at that point.
It does. It's weird what kicks in, and I know you've experienced this, but this knowing instead of thinking, you know, things just some switch just flips in you, and you go into this very primitive survival mode that gets you through it.
Right. Yep.
It's
you're
a strange
absolutely
thing
correct.
That's hard to describe until you've experienced it.
Yep. Absolutely.
Oh,
so the first question
coming
I
out of that, well, that's how I discovered gratitude.
That was like the ultimate gratitude. Oh my gosh! So the first question I always ask on the show is why. I believe it has to be the number one question that you always ask. You know, it has to be the number one question that you wake up in the morning, or at every major decision that you're making. Like, what is your why? So, my question to you is what is your why? Why do you do what you do?
Well, the first why led to the book that I wrote. And what I realized coming out of that whole fire episode was that I was a storyteller. I've been a journalist all my life. And I grew up in the South, so we're all storytellers there. It's sort of culture. I was a storyteller, and I had come out of the worst fire that anyone at that time could remember, and the worst part of it, the part where all the people died, or where most of the people died. So I felt this sacred responsibility to tell that story, to document what I felt would be a historic event, and that was a valid premonition I had, because the incident is now studied as a historic incident by fire leaders everywhere, all over the world. Right. So I wanted to document it. I wanted to pay tribute to the people we lost who couldn't tell their stories for themselves. And I wanted to also celebrate the triumph of the human spirit in the face of adversity. That was my why, to tell the story. So I started to write this book, and geez, if I'd known how long it would take me to get that book out, I probably would have decided to do something else, because the book came out on the 10-year anniversary of the fire. 10 years.
Oh my gosh.
Yes, I know. But
wow.
Then my why became sharing the lessons that I had learned from that transformational moment. That was the moment when that tipping point, when something blows up in your life and everything after that becomes before or after, right? And I felt this desire to share these resilience principles that I call the comeback formula, because it was from that fire experience and the aftermath, my own recovery journey, that I discovered that there are these proven principles, common sense practices that almost anyone can do to come back from almost any adversity. So that became my why, to share that lesson.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. So can you pinpoint, looking back, can you pinpoint exactly what that transformational moment was? I mean, was it defying, you know, the odds and living through the fire, or was it what was to come after that? What do you think was your transformational moment that set you on the path to what you're doing now?
I think it was meeting a man who was incredibly bitter about the fire.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that was transformational was because he had lost the least of anyone I talked to. Mm. He had lost his garage in the fire, a detached garage, and his house was intact. His family was fine. His animals were fine. And he was angry, resentful, bitter.
Wow.
He embraced this label of fire victim that the media and everybody hangs on you immediately after you've been through something like this. Fire victims, hurricane victims, right? Tornado victims. And I was feeling very much not like a victim. I felt that our 12 neighbors were the victims, and I was a survivor, and I was on my way to becoming a victor. And I met this man who was very attached to his victimness. And by contrast, I had talked with two different families who each lost three family members in the fire.
Wow.
So six people in all. And they were not bitter. They said, the fire took so much from us. We're not going to let it take any more. Not our future, not our joy. Our loved ones would want us to go on and be happy and enjoy our lives again, and we're going to honor them by doing that. That's what these people said. Were they grief-stricken? Were they devastated? Of course. They had lost, each of them, three members of their family, but they weren't bitter. And the transformational aha was, what is the difference here? The difference isn't how much or how little they lost. The difference is how they've decided to think of themselves in the aftermath. The difference was the power of choice.
Absolutely.
We don't always get to choose what happens to us, but we can choose our response. Maybe not initially, but we can at least grow into the response that we want to have. And I like to think of it, again, being a storyteller and helping other people with their stories. I help a lot of entrepreneurs with their stories because our stories are our big why stories connect us to the people we want to serve. So I think of it in terms of choosing your story. Are you going to choose a story where you play the victim, or are you going to choose the hero's journey where you overcome this tremendous challenge and come back to the village triumphant with a gift? You know,
I love it.
When I realized that. So even though that man was difficult to deal with at the time, I am really grateful for him because he opened my eyes to the fact that we get to choose.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So I'm even afraid to ask these next two questions. It's a two-parter. So what was the best part about your transformation? Is that it right there?
Yeah, that's it. Because once you realize that you get to choose your response, you get to choose your story going forward, then it gives us so much freedom. And I don't want to say this was an immediate transformation in my life. I still deal with this every day on a day-to-day basis. Like, this didn't work out, or that didn't work out, or I'm stuck in traffic. How am I going to feel about that? I get to choose my response. So it's an ongoing struggle. It's the practice, right? It is a practice, but it gives us so much freedom to know that that part is in our control. That even Viktor Frankl, when he was in the concentration camp, realized that in that dire situation where he had no other freedoms, he still had the freedom to choose his response, to choose the story he was telling himself about it. And, you know, that's really a great gift to know that.
Oh, I love
that. And
what
was the second part of the question? I lost track.
So what was the worst part about it?
Oh, the worst part. Well, the part that really sucked was losing our house. You know, we lost everything we own except for what was in our offices, what was in our cars, what was at the dry cleaners, and what was in that laundry basket I grabbed on the way out. At the time, we didn't know any of our neighbors personally we had just been there for 7 months. So we weren't as immediately affected by the loss of our neighbors. Of course, we were all generally horrified and saddened, as we are even now when we hear about these atrocious events taking lives. So for us personally, the hardest part was that we had lost this beautiful home that we had just embraced 7 months before.
Right.
We lost, you know, it's hard to talk about the effect of suddenly losing all your stuff in a monolithic way, because in a sense, people say it's all stuff, but it is and it isn't. That's why it's kind of a qualified answer. A lot of stuff we can replace with insurance. So, you know, check your insurance policy. But a lot of stuff we can't replace. I couldn't replace the videos of my kids growing up. I couldn't replace
the memories,
the little things that they made me in kindergarten and Sunday school. I couldn't replace my mom's wedding picture. I couldn't replace the quilt that my great-grandmother made. All of those things that you can't replace, the stuff with stories behind it, that's what hurts. That's the part that hurts. The rest of it is stuff, but to lose your home in the in the aggregate sense is very painful.
Tough.
And my heart goes out to all of these people in the spate of disasters that we've had this past year, hurricanes and earthquakes in Mexico and these horrific fires, not just the Northern California fires, but in Montana and British Columbia and Portland. there are thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of people now in Puerto Rico who are homeless. And there's this sense of disorientation, you know, that comes along with that, because you just want to go home. When things are bad, you just think, if I can just get home, you know, kick off my shoes, clothes, whatever.
Right.
But you can't go home.
Right.
So that's the worst part.
Absolutely. Awesome. So let's switch gears a little bit and talk about what's happening now. So who's been your biggest influencer?
Well, I guess I'd have to say that Viktor Frankl was a big influencer, because I found that quote from him about the last of the human freedoms, being able to choose your own way, to choose your own attitude, no matter your circumstances. That was influential. Another big influencer since the fire, honestly, has been a Franciscan priest named Richard Rohr. Have you ever heard of him?
I have not.
Richard Rohr, R-O-H-R. He's written a bunch of books. He has a center in Albuquerque called the Center for Action and Contemplation. And we found him after the fire through some friends who could tell we needed a little spiritual encouragement.
Right.
And I love Richard Rohr because he is very deep and very real, and just helped us to learn really the practice of being grateful for where you are right now, and so much else that was very relevant to us and still is. So he's been a big influencer.
Perfect. Yeah, I like hearing about people that I haven't heard about before. I'm like, oh, no, who's that president?
I recommend all his books, but the place to start is a book called Everything Belongs.
Everything belongs
by Richard Rohr. Kind of blows your mind. Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you enjoy most about what you do?
What I enjoy is I get to share these resilience principles with people who have either been through some sort of cataclysm, or I'm working a lot with emergency professionals, with firefighters and incident managers, who are these amazing people who come in and take charge of the worst possible situations. You know, when something like this goes down, they got to have a team of people to come in and take charge of dealing with the incident and putting things back together again. There are people who, that's their career, and they're called incident managers. Amazing people. And I get to share what I've learned with them, and they appreciate hearing a different perspective, the civilian perspective, and they appreciate the comeback formula, which we're going to get to share that with your listeners, right? The comeback formula?
Yeah, that's what I was just going to ask you. So talk about the comeback formula. What is the comeback formula?
The comeback formula is a set of five practices that I summarized from all of these factors that have been proven now by researchers to help aid our comeback from whatever the adversity may be. So let me ask you, Sean, and you'll know this because, geez, you're a resilience master, but do you tend to think of resilience as being an innate characteristic or an acquired knowledge?
It's definitely acquired and learned many times over.
Yeah, of course you would say that because you teach it. So what we know is that it's both, really. I mean, it's resilience is in our DNA. Yeah, that's our survival instinct. That's what got us out of the fire. And resilience is also a skill that we can learn. So I looked at all of this research and I thought, wow, there are a lot of factors that contribute to resilience. Can I boil them down to only a few that we'd have some hope of remembering? And I got them down to five buckets, and that's the comeback formula. So it's these five very powerful yet common sense practices that have been proven now to be helpful when we hit adversity. And I like to say they're proven to transform disaster into opportunity, crisis into possibility, even loss into legacy, which is a pretty big claim.
Wow.
So we want to go through them, right? We want to tell everybody what they are. So the first,
I kind of do.
Yeah.
I don't want to give away too much because I know you get well paid for other stuff. So I know I don't want to give away too much, but whatever you're comfortable sharing.
Well, we gotta talk about the five principles, and then you know if people want to get into it deeper, we have ways of taking things further.
Yeah.
But the first one is the word "come," as in come to a place of gratitude. And we know from all of this huge amount of research on gratitude that it's pretty much the antidote to any negative emotion. If we can find even one thing to be grateful for in the midst of the soup, it will keep us from getting stuck like that man, you know, who was bitter. It will keep us from getting stuck in that place for too long. It's a step along the way, but we don't want to stay there. So gratitude is the first step towards healing and growth. And we now know from research that even one thing, one time a week, if we write down something we're grateful for, that actually changes our mood, our attitude. And the next four steps of the comeback formula follow the letters BACK in back. The first is to be patient with the pain. It is going to be painful for a while. It's going to be chaotic for a while. It's going to be that smoke and that darkness. And yet believe at the same time that you can come back, because resilience is in our DNA, because we can boost it and build it, because we've come through stuff before and so have other people we know. So that's the B. The A, this is the tough one. Accept help and be tough enough to ask for it when you need it. And this speaks to these values that we, pretty much all of us, really value, and that is faith and community or connection. Mm-hmm. And I know you know these studies too. There are a lot of studies that show the value of community in resilience, right? We can't come back alone. And we are social creatures. We are built to operate within a social context and not to be loners. And yet, this is the toughest one of all. It was tough for me because I didn't want to be anybody's charity case. I was so uncomfortable with people giving me checks and leaving casseroles on my doorstep. This was after the fire, sending me their extra clothes and furniture. And it was just embarrassing. And finally, a friend of mine, who also happened to be a psychologist, took me aside and said, "Sandra, you are resisting all this help people are offering you. And your job right now is to be a grateful recipient. Give them the satisfaction of helping you," by, you know, that line from Jerry Maguire, "help me help you." So there's that.
Right.
And then asking for help when we need it. And this is something I like to underscore when I talk with emergency professionals, because, you know, it's really hard for them to call 911. They are 911. It's difficult for them even to admit that they have been emotionally affected by the trauma of their job. Same thing in the military. And fortunately, that is shifting. And I like to say that asking for help isn't weak, it's wise. And if we look at that hero's journey that has been all charted out for us by mythologist Joseph Campbell, one of the steps of the hero's journey is asking for help. This is why Luke Skywalker had Obi-Wan and Yoda. This is why Harry Potter had Dumbledore. This is why Dorothy had Glinda the Good Witch. We need to ask for help and accept help from the people who come into our lives alongside us in emergency. So that's the A. C is back to our friend Viktor Frankl to choose your response, choose your story. And K is to keep moving forward. And by this, I mean to gradually detach from this past that can't come back. And in that process, then we're able to embrace the possibilities of a new future that would not have been available to us otherwise. A really key part of this last step, Sean, is forgiveness. Mm-hmm. Forgiving ourselves.
Oh, man, that's so huge.
For what happened. And I will tell you that lost hunter who started the cedar fire, I had a chance to meet him because I was doing research on my book, The Fire Outside My Window, and I was going to his court proceedings, and I had a chance the day that he pleaded guilty to tell him that I forgave him. And I don't know if it made any difference to him, but I know it helped me. Forgiveness is such a key part of moving forward.
Oh, yeah.
So that is the comeback formula in 5 steps.
Amazing. I love it.
Yeah, how does that square with what you teach in resilience training?
It aligns with a lot. I think one other step that, and you kind of touch on it, and I keep it, it keeps, you know, the bells keep going off in my head about, you know, there's got to be a form of acceptance in there, you know, accepting
yeah.
where you've been, accepting.
Well,
I think it goes
that's. Yeah, it goes with forgiveness. It goes with in that last bucket, this idea of to keep moving forward, to detach from this past that can't come back. That's the acceptance piece. You're right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got to be, because it's not, it's acceptance is not about, and this is kind of what my TED Talk will be about, you know, acceptance is not about feeling defeated.
No.
You know what I mean? Acceptance is not... You know, people want to be like, well, you know, I accept that this happened, God, but I don't have to like it. You know, okay, yeah, like we get it.
Uh-huh.
But acceptance is knowing what happened. You know what I mean? Like it's accepting, like not spending energy worrying about, you know, or wondering like, well, what happened? And I can't believe it. Like you're so hung up. Like we do this all the time with bad breakups and everything else. You know what I mean? But there are times that we're unable to change, you know, negative beliefs. There's times that we encounter difficult situations that test our resilience, you know, and
Absolutely.
Our coping skills. Some people don't even have coping skills.
Yeah.
But even though you can't remove the hardships or the loss or the grief, you know, completely from your life, you know, you may need to accept that some beliefs and thoughts that you have lead to reactions that are very uncomfortable.
Right. Yeah.
Not allowing yourself. Feel defeated. It's about an opportunity to accept the challenges in your life, make meaning of them, and then grow. You know, so acceptance
exactly.
is not just yeah. It's not about getting over a bad event or not thinking about it again. It's just about helping you manage the expectations. So you're not blaming yourself all the time, and it goes with forgiveness.
That goes with forgiveness, and that goes with this detaching from the past and being
exactly.
able to embrace the future. And what happens
yep.
almost every time. We go through something difficult is there are silver linings.
Mm-hmm.
We can't
yep.
get to them though if we're still hanging on, if we're, one way of putting it is attached to our suffering. If
right.
we're still saying 10 years afterwards, you know, why didn't the firefighters save my house? That kind of thing. So yeah,
right.
I like
yep.
both of those thoughts. And of course, there are a lot of other principles that come under each of these 5 steps, the whole process of self-care and mindfulness exercises, you know, to help us be present in the moment instead of spinning our wheels in the past that can't come back and those kinds of things. But overall, they all fit in to one of these 5 areas.
Yep. Absolutely, absolutely. I love it. Love that. So I always ask, you know, every guest, and I love the answers that I get to this because they're so spread out. So what's been one of the best resources that you have used so far on your journey?
The best resources? I mean, besides the internet? Because you know, I am a journalist, so I do a lot of research.
Well, I've heard, you know, like MailChimp and, you know, this particular book and this person. I've heard Experience was one of the best resources. I'm like, ooh. I've heard people tell me that, you know, podcasting is one of the greatest resources that I've had. You know, I've heard that a couple people that are in my network are one of my greatest resources. I'm like, well, where do they get their resource? They're like, I don't know. So,
right.
like, if you have network. Like, how do they become so smart? But it all boils down to, you know, what is it that we've relied on? And you know, Tony Robbins has a great video about this, right? He says, so what you're telling me is that you were not successful in business because you had a lack of capital, because you have a lack of money, and you didn't put in the strategies that were necessary to be successful, and you didn't find a mentor. So it sounds like the resources are not the problem. It sounds like your lack of resourcefulness is a problem. And I was like,
yikes.
Like blew my mind. I was like, oh my God, you're so So I always listen to that. And I'm like, okay, how do I become more resourceful? Like the resources are out there, but how do I become resourceful to get the resources?
Yeah.
So what do you think is the best resource that you've used, that you've relied on a lot?
Wow. The thing that comes to mind is I relied on my training as a journalist. I realized that, at least initially in coming back, I realized that when people hit crisis, we sort of fall back on what we always do, right? We fall back on people we've known and our networks and what we've always done. For example, I was once in a situation where, believe it or not, my sister-in-law's house in Arizona was threatened by a fire, and the fire actually burned through her neighborhood and the firefighters were able to save her house. But for a week, we didn't know. We're all crammed into my mother-in-law's house. And so we all did the things that were sort of our go-to response. Like, my mother-in-law cooked and did laundry. You know, my husband, the photographer, went out and took pictures of the fire. Mm-hmm. My sister, who's an equestrian, helped all of her friends move their horse. And I'm on the computer doing research, looking for information, you know, following the social media feeds. What is the fire doing? I ask questions and I try to get information. So I think one of my greatest resources in coming back from our fire experience was this habit, this profession or career I've had as a reporter, just in asking questions. And it was cathartic for me to research that book because of that, because I really had so many questions about what just happened here. What happened to us? How did this happen? Why did it happen? Why didn't anybody wake us up? How did it go so fast? And that's just my default, right? So I started asking questions and interviewing all these people. And what I discovered was that, back to the storytelling aspect, it was mm-hmm. helpful not just to me, but to other people, because one of the ways we process trauma is by telling our stories. And I was interviewing these firefighters, and they would be telling, you know, I was asking them, what was it like for you? And they would be telling me their stories, how frustrating it was that they couldn't stop an unstoppable fire. What they've trained their whole lives to do, to protect lives and property. And this thing just rolled over them, because there are certain unstoppable fires. Just like you can't stop a hurricane, you can't stop a tornado or a tsunami. Sometimes there are fires in that category, and this was one of them. So the resource then would be asking questions, finding out other people's perspectives, and maybe that's the best way to look at it, because, you know, we're in a moment in time right now where our culture, our global community is so divided. And if we took time to hear other people's stories, and if we just kept quiet long enough and respectfully listened to somebody else's perspective, it would go a long way to healing on both sides.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Love it. So I got to ask, where are you headed now? What kind of new adventures, businesses, family? But tell me about what you're doing today.
Well, that's always an unfolding question. What I can tell you is I am still on this journey of evolving. And what I learned was this whole comeback formula thing, that is the first step of what could be a longer journey. Because when we're in the midst of something, we're a victim. But just by changing our story in our mind, we can evolve even sometimes instantaneously to being survivors. And then when we're survivors, we don't want to stay there. You know, a lot of the world has to live in survival mode, but we don't want to be there. We don't want to camp out on this ash heap that used to be our house. We don't want to float around on the life ring forever. We want to reboot. We want to rebuild. We want to come back, maybe stronger than before. So then we move to this next step of the journey where we're thrivers. And that's great. We don't have to move on, except usually we do. Usually we think, wow, we've learned so much, and I want to help other people. I'm more empathetic now. And so then we start giving, and we become givers. It might just be as simple as taking a plate of cookies to somebody new in the neighborhood, because when we were new in the neighborhood, nobody cared that we were there. It might be sharing our wisdom, teaching, mentoring, coaching, volunteering. We become givers, and givers make the world go round. But there is one more step on this journey that some people are called to, and that is becoming what I call a changer. And you look at the greatest people that we admire in the world, in history. And for example, think of Malala, think of Nelson Mandela, think of, of, you know, the Dalai Lama. We admire these people because they have overcome unthinkable adversity, and they have leveraged that loss into a legacy. So that's where I want to go. I want to leverage this thing all the way up into a legacy that will be a blessing to the world.
Drop. Dude, I love that. I got goosebumps right now. That was so great.
I'm glad you recorded it.
Like,
yeah.
What? You heard it here first, folks. You heard it here first. That was so great. Like, I love the word legacy, but the way that you used it and have a vision for it. Oh, that's so great. Like,
that's
that is
the
so
choice we have.
Huge.
That's part of our choice. And it's not just the world leaders.
Right.
Let me tell you really quick about my friend, Rena. Rena lost her 15-year-old son to sudden cardiac death, which really affects a lot of kids. 7,000 kids a year in the United States alone die from sudden cardiac death. And Rena's son, Eric, was one of them. No symptoms, no clues, athletic guy. And was devastated. So it took her a while to come back from that. But when she did, she decided that she was going to help other families avoid that kind of heartache. And so Rena started a foundation, and now we are 7-8 years out from Eric's death, and she has this foundation called the Eric Paredes Save a Life Foundation that screens teenagers for the kinds of cardiac abnormalities undetected that killed and so many others. So she finds one kid out of every 100 she screens, just a simple EKG, and they do these clinics on weekends at various high schools. About 1 in 100 is at risk, and they can refer that one for treatment and save that child's life. So Rena
and they find it, like, you're predisposed to this, like they find it during their screening.
They can find it during a simple EKG, which is not a part of a typical physical, even a sports physical for a child. Yeah. So that's what Rena's doing. And that's an example of a changer, right? She has leveraged this loss into legacy for others.
That's like Mothers Against Drunk Driving.
Exactly the same thing. Yeah. Candy Leitner.
I was just saying her, who's her daughter?
Yeah. She lost her daughter to a drunk driver.
Yeah. She lost a daughter to drunk driving. And, And became, you know, it became mad. And now it's like, I mean, it's huge. I mean, the organization is huge.
And
so.
See, she was an ordinary person. How many people have been in that same situation, you know, but a few people do feel called And it's not easy, Sean. I mean, my friend Rena says, I'm glad that we're doing all of this, but I would rather have my son back, right?
Sure. No, absolutely. So God did not equip me to bear a child. I'm just throwing it out there. She did not equip me to bear a child. I'd be on resilience overdrive.
Well, that's it, you know? And so we look at these people who've been through these extreme circumstances, and this is another reason why I didn't feel like I was a victim. I thought, you know, I lost my house. My family's intact. So the other thing I've learned, though, is not to judge loss. It's not a contest. It's not on any sort of continuum. Loss is loss, and grief is grief, and stress is stress. But what's universal is we all have the opportunity to transform that loss into possibilities and opportunities and even legacy.
Mm. I love that. So as we wrap up the shameless plug moment, we can plug a friend, quote, websites, Facebook, products, movies, give a shout out, do whatever it is. This is your time. I've even shined an all episode, but this is your time to shine. Shameless plug moment. Go.
Well, thank you. What I would like to say is I invite our listeners today to go to comebackformula.com. comebackformula.com, and they can download a copy of the steps of the comeback formula and also this little thing that I put together. I want you to try this, Sean, because Mr. Resilience, I want to see what you think of this. I call it the 5-minute resilience workout, and it's just a series of things you can do right now, just simple stuff within 5 or so minutes that would help you implement some of these principles into your life. Mm-hmm. So that they're actionable, not just ideas that go in and out of your ears. So comebackformula.com will take you to a page where you can download the comeback formula and the 5-minute resilience workout. And then you will also be on my website, shameless plug. If you need a gift, try the fire outside my window. Readers say they can't put it down. Also, I have a comeback formula workbook there, which is my full curriculum, the comeback formula and the science behind each piece and exercises you can do to implement it into your life. So if you would like to purchase either of those books, you will be on that page once you download through comebackformula.com. How's that for shameless plug?
I'm going to check it out because I want to do like.
Yeah. I am available for keynotes or workshops.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. So hire her to do a resilience workshop. Yeah. I do 4 resilience boot camps a year, and you do some pretty amazing workshops as well. So
I'm doing one next week. Yeah. We do the workshops, right?
Awesome. So, as we wrap up and close, can you deliver your best nugget of knowledge that will motivate, transcend, and inspire someone to take action?
Yes, I can. Follow your bobcat. To me, the bobcat is grace that just drops into your life when you most need it and least expect it. And I believe that we trust that it's going to be there and be watching for it. And when we see it, know to follow it. Follow your bobcat.
Oh, I love that. Like follow your bobcat. Dude, oh my God. Like the metaphor that we can, that's amazing.
I don't know what your bobcat's going to look like, but you'll know it when you see it, and you just got to know to follow it.
Thank you so much, Sandra, for being on the show. This has been an amazing experience, and I love what you're doing. Thank you so much for your time.
Sean, my pleasure. Thanks for the opportunity, and thanks for everything you're doing. I hope we really touched some lives today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. So, Life Transformation Radio listeners, another great episode, another impactful guest. You have to connect with Sandra. Go to sandrayounger.com. Go to comebackformula.com. Get the stuff. Get connected with her. So, as we close, I want to give you a reminder. Find opportunities every day to live up the values you're holding in your heart, your brand. And until next time, have a good night.